All right, there is our music, which means we get started with the Aging Well Together show, but we are sitting back today. Sorry, I can't even get my words right. We have fantastic returning guests, and so it's like, all right, old friends, what are we doing on the microphone today? I will tell you, we have a very powerful show. As we've discussed the past few shows, it is June, for folks listening to us live, you know that, and if this is a recorded one, sorry about that, but it is June for us, and that makes it Alzheimer's and Brain Health Awareness Month. And so this show continues in our series of sharing fabulously helpful brain health information. And I am so excited. We have two favorite guests and friends, and frankly, sponsors of the Aging Well Together show. We have two of the Orange County Department on Aging stars. We have Marie Dagger and Kendall McMillan. And we are longtime friends and colleagues. We talk so much, not on the microphone, that we're like, oh, we should probably turn the microphones on now for our conversation. I am so excited for all we'll learn together today. But as always, before we dive into our show, I want to give a shout out to WCOMLP Chapel Hill Carrboro for hosting our fabulous Aging Well Together show. And I was using the word fabulous, I wasn't going to do it for us. I meant to do it also for the Orange County Department on Aging, who is the amazing sponsor and founder and birther of our Aging Well Together show. I'm going to turn the microphone on for our guests so we can hear their giggles. For everyone, thank you for joining us, and please join us each week as we interview special guests to share information, resources, insights, and stories about the opportunities for aging well together. You can catch us live every Thursday from 2 to 3. Except for on July 4th. That is going to be a recorded show. I'm warning you all now. Or you can stream us live through WCOMFM.org. Or you can listen to any of our previous shows, also known as our podcasts, through the Orange County Department on Aging's website, which is www.orangecountync.gov/aging. We're going to be referring to that website a few times on this show today because beyond finding links to our Aging Well Together show, the Orange County Department on Aging website has so many helpful resources about services in Orange County, North Carolina, and we will talk about some of them today. And if you have questions about any of the resources we discuss, and you may, you can call the Department on Aging at, this is where I take a pause and let you get your pens out and your paper. You can call them at 919-968-2070, or feel free to email me at theagingwelltogethershow@gmail.com, all one word, agingwelltogethershow@gmail.com. I see my guests looking at each other. Yes, we will also do the aging helpline number in just a little bit. Did I totally read your eyesight correctly? Yes.
Just so, trying to remember who 2070 is.
That's your main desk.
Oh,
yeah.
We should probably know that.
Yeah, let me explain the telephone number to the people about 20 yards away from your offices. That's the main desk. And so we send folks there if they have general questions for the Aging Well Together show or for just general topics about Orange County Department on Aging. But we will absolutely be sharing the number in just a little bit of the Aging Helpline. So if you want to really dive into specific issues for you or your loved ones. All right. So we talked about the website. We talked about reaching out to me on at agingwelltogethershow@gmail.com. You heard just a little bit of our favorite band, the Carrboro bass band, the Robert Bradford Quartet, RBQ, as they are known, because sometimes that quartet is a quintet. And just, I think it was last weekend, I got to hear, and there were five of them this time, they did a lovely performance, and I just love that band. So Robert and band members, if you're listening, thank you so much for allowing us to use your great music for our opening and closing music. And I did hear the live version of Mayfly, and I was like, that's my music. And you'll hear more at the end of the show. And then my fabulous co-host, Alicia Reed. I think Alicia's in the car and is listening to us right now. We're all looking at the parking lot. We miss you, Alicia. She's going to be coming in just a little while. I told her there's a chair and microphone for her if she wants to join. But she will be here for her show, Afternoon Talk with Alicia. So make sure to stick around after our show so you can hear Alicia's musing of the day and of the week. Okay, and now for me. I'm Heather Altman. You know me by now, and I've spent over 25 years working in aging services and supports. I help older adults and their families connect with resources in our community, and I work with so many individuals on a daily basis who either themselves or their loved ones are experiencing dementia and brain change. And so I am particularly interested in this show, and then listeners go on the website to listen to our last few shows, all about understanding the brain, understanding different resources. So I'm absolutely thrilled what we're going to get involved with in our conversation. As I've also shared in the past, I'm a caregiver for older family members, and at 53 for the next few months, I'm focusing on my own changing needs, so I'm super invested in how we are all aging well together. Okay, now for our great returning guest this week. We have two, as I've said before, of the wonderful Orange County Department on Aging staff here. Both are part of what is called the Aging Aging Transitions team. We have Marie Rawlings Dagger, who is an occupational therapist and a certified dementia care partner, and Kendall McMillan, who is an elder care social worker. She's also a certified dementia care partner, as well as a positive approach to care certified independent consultant and trainer. I throw that out there because we have had two recent shows with Tipa Snow and her different team members from Positive Approach to Care. We all have training in that, I think, in different ways. And then Kendall is also a MoCA certified rater for memory screening. You are too, Marie. Both of them are MoCA memory screeners, and they will tell us what that means, all about the MoCA. And I'm just giving you a spoiler alert. It's a memory screen. So we're going to talk about that. But first, welcome back, Marie and Kendall.
Thanks, Thank Heather. You. Thanks for having us.
Oh, it's so nice. I was thinking about this on the drive over. I cannot remember, and I should have looked up. Is it your third or your fourth show? This is at least the third, if not fourth. Kendall, what for you?
We were just talking about this. I think this is my third.
I think this is your third.
And I feel like I was on here another time. I can't remember if it's third or fourth.
All right. Here's why I'm going to look this up. Because if anyone out there, well, I don't want to give you too much of an excitement, but if anyone is a Saturday Night Live, they have the Five Timers Club, where a Five Timers get a little surprise. And I'm not going to say what it is, but I've been thinking about that because Kendall and Marie are definitely in the running. They are going to be, I think, the first group that's going to hit the Five Timers Club, and there will be something.
My next date with you is already on the calendar. I'm coming back in September for Falls Month.
Okay, so I'm going to count. And it's very easy to count. Listeners, you can do it for me if anyone wants to fact check after today. We go on the podcast and we have the names and pictures. So this will be an easy thing for me to figure out in just a little bit. But all right, so since you've been on before, we've gotten your life stories. But why don't you at least remind everyone of what you do at the Orange County Department on Aging. So Marie, you're to my right. I will turn it over to you first.
In the hot seat first. Yeah, so as an occupational therapist, I do a lot of just consultation with community members about how to be safe, how to remain in their homes, how to make life just a little bit more possible when things are changing that maybe we weren't expecting to change, or in ways we weren't expecting it to change. And so that might look like falls prevention related strategies. That might be, you know, recommending changes to your home, grabbing you a piece of equipment that might be helpful, or that maybe a home health therapist has recommended for you. That includes, you know, education around dementia, whether that is, you know, changes for yourself, whether that's changes in a loved one. That involves, you know, Heather teased the MoCA a little bit, doing some cognitive assessments. There's a couple different ones that I'm able to do, you know, just kind of understand where a person is and what's going on in the world and what we might be able to tweak to better fit their current abilities. I guess I just kind of put my problem solving hat with all the different situations people throw my way and see, you know, what can we do to make your life a little bit easier right now?
I love that. Thank you. And I went to do a referral to you just yesterday, but then realized the person technically lives in Chatham County,
Orange
County.
I get so many of those, and it makes me so sad.
That's okay. There are other resources for folks that will do OT home assessments, and Medicare will cover that. So I was able to do a referral. Well, at least it won't have a cost directly to them because it will go through Medicare, if I'm not mistaken, right?
You can. I think so. I'm a little fuzzy on, I mean, it's Medicare.
Yes.
I'm a little fuzzy on that. But at the same time, I always also encourage for folks who live in Chatham, who live in Durham, I encourage them to go ahead and call their aging agency and say, hey, Orange County does this. Why can't we?
Ooh, okay, good.
That's a little bit of advocacy.
I will look into that for them. But yeah, I did do it. And I was like, oh, it's Chatham County. Anyway, we love you, Chatham County. We just, Orange County has really set the bar high for your taxpayer dollars at work, which is wonderful resources. So thank you, Marie, and we go back forever. Kendall, what do you do at Aging Transitions?
I love Marie kind of putting the problem solver hat on. I think that should be our new tagline for the team is the problem solvers. It seems like that's kind of the direction we go. So I'm one of the social workers on the team. And so, yeah, a lot of problem solving. People call and are dealing with all types of life changes. And a lot of times it is related to dementia and brain change. Sometimes it's just I have noticed a few things here and there. And, you know, what's serious, what's not serious. Or it's I am living with this diagnosis. My partner, my mom, my friend is living with this diagnosis. What are the resources available to help them? And kind of sorting through some of those. And, yes, sometimes it's the cognitive screening. Sometimes it's getting in touch with different resources to help them go about their day-to-day life and maintain their independence as long as possible. And sometimes it's working with families to understand, you know, what is changing about this person that you know? Because so often one thing I hear is that this is not my mom, this is not my friend. And it is. It doesn't always feel like it, and there are a lot of things that are changing, but there are ways that we can still connect with folks to find, you know, the person that we've always known.
Oh, I love that, and I like the term problem solving. I was thinking in my own life lately if I would change my tagline to be, I'm the place where people come to cry, because I've had so many, or swear, frankly. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I've had a number of tearful, when I work privately with clients, that are just, and it does connect in all times to dementia and caregiving for a loved one who is going through a lot and their caregiver is going through a lot. And we had a show early on caregiver burnout and issues like that. But I like problem solving better. That's a more action oriented as opposed to just, okay. So we were emailing and there was all kinds of fun things that you were sending my way for things we could talk about for Brain Health Month. And they are all like these kind of snippy little 10 signs of this, 10 signs of that. Mm-hmm. So basically, here I am talking because all I want to do is turn it over to you all for the rest of the show. Tell us about, one of the things was the 10 signs, and I think this is the 10 signs of Alzheimer's or dementia? Tell us what it. You've just basically brought lots of goodies. Take it away, my friends.
Do you want to get started?
Yeah,
well, I guess one thing to think about. Have we talked about dementia versus Alzheimer's versus at all on any of the other shows this month?
You know, it doesn't matter.
Okay,
we have, but I think it. I need to hear things over and over again. And even last time we were talking about strokes and I didn't realize, and dementia is such a broad term. So please do that. Let's start off with that.
Yeah, so that's one thing that I think we both do a lot of is dementia education, whether that is formal programs. We do a 4-week dementia education program that we actually have coming up this summer in July, but also just one-on-one with families as well. And a lot of times people will say, you know, I don't think it's Alzheimer's, or they didn't say Alzheimer's. Well, there's a lot of different types of dementia. So dementia itself is not a diagnosis per se. It is more of a syndrome. And I feel like I'm stealing Marie's word.
No, you're good. Take it away.
I'm thinking umbrella.
It is an umbrella term. And so there's lots of different diagnoses that fall under that, whether it's the top four are Alzheimer's, vascular dementia, frontotemporal dementia, Lewy body dementia. Mm-hmm. Yes. So there's 120 plus different individual dementias, but they all kind of fall under that umbrella. So a lot of the things we'll reference are from the Alzheimer's Association, but the Alzheimer's Association does a lot of research and advocacy for all types of dementia and brain change.
I've heard that it both matters and it doesn't matter at a certain extent. And I'll tell you how I heard it. Just in some ways, a lot of the approaches can have some similarities with people with brain change.
Absolutely.
Where it matters, the differentiation, is when you start playing with chemicals and medication. And that's where I've heard people say, okay, you really do want to know the difference, because medication for Alzheimer's is not the same for vascular dementia. But on the big picture of those of us in the non-medical community, how we approach really anyone in general, but anyone with brain change, there is some similarities. Is that a fair thing to say?
I'd say in general, yeah.
Feel free to disagree with me. Last week we had a doctor on and I kept messing up medical things. I was like, I should just not talk.
I mean, in general, yeah. The way you interact with a person, you know, it's, you know, just being as respectful as you can across the board, mm-hmm. regardless of what, you know, their skills and abilities are. So that doesn't change. And yes, anytime you add medications, you know, chemicals, as you said, into the mix, it absolutely matters. And you want to make sure you have that very specific diagnosis, because you don't want to make things worse by giving a medication that's, mm-hmm. not recommended. I'd say the other way it matters is then it gives you a little bit more of a roadmap about what symptoms might be considered normal for a diagnosis. Because, you know, with Alzheimer's, we have this very gradual, long time progression. You know, it can take, you know, it might take 5 years, it might take 25 years for the full course of the disease to run its course. Whereas other timelines, like I feel like frontotemporal mm-hmm. seems to be a little bit shorter of a timeline.
And that's heartbreaking because it hits the frontal lobe, which is so much of our personality and executive
absolutely.
Action.
And so, you know, if you're told Alzheimer's and you're thinking Alzheimer's and you start having all these, like, you know, frontal and temporal lobe behaviors, which for our listeners, that's a lot of challenges with, like, problem solving and intuition and you know, being able to start, continue, and finish a task, and, you know, recognize, like, this is not something I should say out loud.
And then you still say it.
And then you still say it anyway. You know, that impulse control, that filter just ceases to exist. And that can happen in Alzheimer's, but normally a little bit later, a little bit further into the progression. So having that diagnosis just kind of lets you know, like, this can be normal. This can be typical behavior for this diagnosis, or this feels a little bit off.
Mm-hmm. And I remember I knew some folks with Lewy body dementia. Mm-hmm. That has some physicality to it, right?
Absolutely.
That kind of shuffle walk.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's got a lot of Parkinson's-like symptoms to go along with it. And you won't necessarily see those in Alzheimer's.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
And so, yeah, it lets you understand, be a little less surprised when something new comes up.
And now I'm just kind of thinking through the fourth of the big four. Vascular, to me, is more when people start having kind of strokes or other mm-hmm. brain changes, and that can plateau, right?
Absolutely.
So you see,
I know some folks with that.
You see a little bit more of a stepwise progression with that. So things will kind of plateau for a little bit, and then there'll be a dip, and then they plateau for a little bit, and then there's another dip. So that's another thing that's really helpful to know, that okay, there's going to be some sudden change one day. We don't know when, and we don't know how big of a change, but if that happens, we know that's part of the progression.
Mm-hmm. Oh, fascinating. So
whereas it was somebody with Alzheimer's, if they had a very sudden change, to me that means, like, let's go to the doctor ASAP mm-hmm. and check out and see what's going on.
Because there could be an underlying infection
absolutely.
On top of things, because you don't see. All right. So that's why, I guess, listeners, it depends on if you're looking at approach issues, maybe doesn't make, you know, you treat everyone, there is some mm-hmm. general, but if you're looking at the roadmap, I love how you said it, and how you're sort of planning and approaching the disease more medically, it's good to know the different types. But I, 120, so that's what you do a lot of education, is helping people understand the full.
Mm-hmm. Mind you, we can't talk fluently about all 120.
No.
Don't ask us to.
No,
Google's great for that.
Yeah, I won't. It's fine. And I, you know, there's lots of people who present different ways. And again, it depends on what your goal is and why you're asking.
Absolutely.
And so I'm glad you brought up the work that you do. Before we get, I know we will get back into the 10 signs. You started to talk about some of the programs that you have for folks with dementia. And I love the name, one of your umbrella names you have at Aging Transition, which is OC Cares. And so, because I think a lot of the work falls under it, define for us, because I was having a copy and paste problem. Oh, gosh. I know. Now
oh
I made
boy.
Them.
Oh
I
boy.
Tried to do it from the flyer, and I couldn't. It's
Orange County
caregiver awareness, mm-hmm. respite, education, and support.
Oh, there we go. That spells out OC Cares.
It does. That's
what I tried. Caregiver
awareness, respite, education, and support. And that term actually came out of a giant grant we got. Oh, that was
back in the day. I was part of that with Sherry Roseman mm-hmm. and Janice Tyler. Oh, mm-hmm. When was it?
That would have been the grant was awarded in 2015.
Yeah,
because I came on as part of that grant in 2016.
Yes, that was a federal grant that we all received, just about $1 million mm-hmm. to do some really great. And what's amazing is all these years later, while that money has stopped, the work that was created, a lot of it continues
absolutely.
On.
Absolutely. We did. That was one of our goals, is to make things as sustainable as we could, you know, keep going. Because, I mean, just because the money runs out doesn't mean that the caregiver needs to.
You should send the government a love note. Hey, we sustain this. Send
Can we get some more?
More money. Oh, yes. All right. So then under the OC Cares, and again, we will get back to the 10 signs, but you started to talk about, because I saw some flyers and I wasn't sure when to ask about it, but I'll do it now. These programs that you have, and there is a lot going on this summer for folks. So tell us about your programs.
Yeah. I'll let you take the lead on this, because this is a program Marie kind of birthed out of that grant, and it's gone through some evolution over the years.
Yeah, I was going to say, the big one is in July, we're offering our Dementia Basics Education Series again. And mm-hmm. this, we offer it once a quarter in various different parts of the county. So this summer, it's back right here in Chapel Hill. We'll be hosting it at the Seymour Center. I'm trying to remember the time of day.
It's Wednesdays from 10 to 12.
Thank you, Heather.
I really do look at things you send me. I looked at the, because I thought, the reason why I really caught that it was Wednesdays from 10 to 12. So is it all four Wednesdays in July after the 4th of July, or does it start July 3rd?
After
the 4th.
So that
we're trying to be
July
kind
10th,
to ourselves.
17th, 24th, and 31st. Is that right?
That sounds right.
Is there 31 days?
Yes, you are spot on.
I was paying attention. Okay, so listeners, you have time. Who is there a cost? Who's eligible to join?
100% free. I mean, we, you know, created it for Orange County residents, but really anybody's welcome to join us.
Mm-hmm. Do you find that it's generally family members, like spouses and adult children of folks? Is it people who are experiencing brain change themselves?
It's a little of both.
I'd say the majority of folks are, you know, family members, concerned friends, concerned neighbors, that kind of thing. Sometimes it's folks who just want to know more. They're just trying to be good citizens and wanting to know more about what dementia is. We do have some folks living with brain change themselves that are trying to, you know, maybe pretty recently diagnosed, trying to get the lay of the land. But really the doors, you know, we've even had a few like high school students mm-hmm. join mm-hmm. us who just want to learn, want to take a class over the summer, and want to learn a little bit more.
That's really helpful to know, because I actually work with some interns, UNC undergrad and graduate interns, so that's nice to know.
Yeah,
that
send them our way. Yeah.
So the reason why I focused on that, it was on Wednesdays, and I didn't get a chance to flip-flop between different flyers. Is it at the same time as, first of all, I'm going to ask you to define our place so people know what I'm talking about, and is it scheduled at the same time for people that, or I couldn't tell, for... Okay.
It is,
so
actually.
So this was, there's some intentionality. I got this strategy.
It was not, I don't know if we necessarily did it intentionally, but we've done that a couple times.
Oh, take the credit. It totally
worked out very well.
Yeah.
Yes. So I think maybe in the fall last year we had, or maybe it was even last summer, we had another Wednesday, and we had a few caregivers from our place who attended and found it very helpful.
And Allison came on the show, but I'm right. We just always want to define things in case people, mm-hmm. for some crazy reason, don't listen to every single show and remember everything
to
go over. What is our place? Yes. And then as another program.
Our place is our caregiver respite program at the Department on Aging. So it's a once a week program where caregivers drop off their loved ones who are living with some type of brain change, and their loved ones get to do activities. They have lunch, there's exercise and music and all types of fun things. And there is I should say drop off. It's not necessarily just a walk in and drop off. There's a screening process to make sure that we can meet the person's needs, because it is for a very large portion volunteer run. Allison is mm-hmm. on staff with us, but her entire team is volunteers. Mm-hmm. So we want to make sure that they can meet folks' needs. And it's been really successful.
And what are the hours of that program?
10 to 2.
So that's why a loved one could go and they're a care partner and they're a person, PLWD, a person mm-hmm. living with dementia, would go into the Our Place program from 10 to 2, and then the loved one could at least spend 10 to 12 getting some dementia basics.
Absolutely.
But yes, I did see on the flyer there's currently a wait list for Our Place, so connect with that. Hey, folks, if you're interested, mm-hmm. you can that general number of the 968-2070. We'll give the aging helpline, but mm-hmm. there's an Ask for Allison Smith or the Our Place. So we just combined two programs in sense. We talked about your dementia basics. We talked about the R program. Are there other, I'm thinking there's a caregiver, so I feel like there's a third program.
We've kind of got two more. So we do have the caregiver support programs, the caregiver support groups. We have got five support groups that we host.
Wow.
So one is specifically actually for folks, caregivers of folks with Parkinson's. That's a partnership with the UNC Movement Disorders Clinic and their yes. social worker over there. We have one support group that meets at the Seymour Center in Chapel Hill, one at the Passmore Center in Hillsboro, a virtual support group, and then part of the Our Place program also includes a support group for the caregivers of that program. That's twice a month after they've dropped off their mm-hmm. loved one. So
wait, yeah. I just counted. Is that five? Did you say there's four or eight?
There's five.
There's five. Okay, yes. Good.
Yes.
I don't know where I got eight. And I would like to ask you all about the concept of support groups mm-hmm. because not the concept, but the openness to it. I've been talking a lot with folks both individually as well as I do sort of big picture, as you all know, public health policy and programming. And this issue of support groups has very mixed vibes. Mm-hmm. For people for whom it works well, it works well. Okay, that's a brilliant statement. It's that there's a lot of folks that are so overwhelmed or their time's overwhelmed that they can't join a group. What's been your sense? Because when I talk with folks, do you want to join a support group? Their look, and maybe because by the time they come to me, just like some of your folks, they're already in a bit of a panic stage. Yes. And are just trying to figure out things that they don't have the mental and physical or time energy for a support group.
Yeah.
How do you find that?
I think there's a little bit of both, you know, and sometimes it's a personality thing. If you have always been someone who likes to talk with other people and have that kind of group think and problem solving with other people, then they are really excited about it. But you're right. Sometimes people are just so overwhelmed, or if they're particularly introverted, it's a little intimidating to come into a group and say, hey, here's this huge thing that's going on in my life and I'm having a really hard time with it. It's intimidating. Yeah. And I try and, you know, make that as little of a barrier as possible by just kind of, you know, it can be whatever the group wants it to be. And it really yes. is, it's a space for them. And that's how I open up all my groups is, you know, this space is for you. I'm here to mm-hmm. facilitate if needed. But that's how I always say the groups are running the best is when I don't have to do anything because they're just kind of feeding off each other. Mm-hmm. And it can be really practical. Sometimes it's just, hey, I'm having a really hard time finding a neurologist without a wait. You know, who do you all go to?
And it's funny, we've had neurology guests yes. on this show twice. I'm like, oh, how do we get in? And that, as I think about that, that was one of my, the question that just popped into my head is, are they coming together to do group venting and emotional support, or is it more that tangible support? Like, hey, I'm having a hard time finding a neurologist, or mm-hmm. how do people get sleep at night, or, you know, or is it more?
It's a little bit of both. I think it kind of depends who's in the room and what kind of day they're having. You know, there are some days where it is just all that venting and we walk away and I feel like, did we even really accomplish anything? But that's the space they needed yes. right then is, you know, there are days where you just need to let it out. And then there's other days where, you know, someone's got a list of questions. They're like, here's all the things I want help figuring out. And they work together on that. So it really just depends.
Interesting. When I talk with folks who don't have the time or wherewithal to join a support group, I do call out there's, you know, social media and mm-hmm. online stuff is such a double-edged sword, but I have found, especially on Facebook, I, for a long time, was a part of the AARP caregiver. Mm-hmm. There's all these private groups that are caregiver support or adult children of something or disease-specific ones. And it is amazing to go on and what people need. People sometimes need to, I've seen venting, I've seen, hey, what are your favorite incontinence products for mm-hmm. men? I've seen real tangible. And then I've seen people, what's amazing is people who put their comments out anonymously, which I love it because especially if they want to say, hey, I need a place to say some hateful stuff and I don't want it to come back to me. It's always amazing then for people who don't do anonymous and they put it out there, some of their issues. But I find that they can, you know, comment at 2 a.m. and 3 a.m. and then there's hundreds of people who are like, hey, we're there for you. So listeners, if you're needing support, know that there is both in-person and virtual support through the Orange County Department on Aging, and there's online support. Yes. So we just don't want anyone struggling alone.
Absolutely.
Is that. Now, that was quite a tangent we went on from know the 10 signs. Do you all, we have all these like David Letterman, for those of you who remember the top 10s. We've got like three top 10s. So the first one is know the signs. So which of you wants to do, Marie, you want to do the top 10 signs?
Sure, I can do that.
Great.
Thank you, Kendall, for bringing printouts today.
They're like, what do we do? I said, you said you're going to have all these lists. Have the lists.
And so, yeah, like we said probably 10 minutes ago, is that this list was created by the Alzheimer's Association. And I think it does kind of lean towards Alzheimer's a little bit, but not, you know, not exclusively. It's still, you know, things to kind of keep an eye on, things to consider, things to think about if you're noticing, you know, not just one, but, you know, a handful of these things. It's looking for trends over time and looking for things that are different from a person's baseline, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. You know, we got it's something that has changed in the person, not, you know, not that they've just always been this way and it happens to appear on the list.
Which, by the way, quick tangent, I find that hard, not hard, it's fascinating. I thought about this a lot this week. When people first come to us and they're already experiencing brain change, we don't know what their baseline.
Absolutely.
So I'm working with someone now and I don't know how they have been and how they approach change and decision making throughout their whole life. I see what I see now. So I don't know what I'm seeing, whether it's brain change or whether it's their own personality for the last, you know, 70, 80 years.
Okay, and that's also why, I mean, another side tangent, why I recommend getting a cognitive assessment when you don't think you have any challenges, because then we have a baseline.
Yeah.
We have, you know, an assessment that you've done in the prime of your life. And that way, if something does change down the road, we have something to compare against.
Ooh, okay. We will get to that soon. Mm-hmm. And then that, it also becomes fun cocktail party tricks, but I'll tell you about that later, clearly. I like to give cognitive tests to people after they've been drinking. It's really fun.
I bet that is super fun.
It is really fun, by the way. Okay. So the 10 signs.
Know the 10 signs.
Okay.
Number one, memory loss that disrupts daily life. Number two, challenges in planning or solving problems.
Hey, wait, we have to go slower because of my brain taking in. So number one was challenges like I forgot why I went in the kitchen. Like that, what was the first one?
Memory loss that disrupts daily life.
Memory loss, okay, why I went in here, why I'm doing this. Like,
yeah, and so, but yeah, that disrupts daily life to a point where maybe you can't retrace your steps and remember what it was that was going on. Because that sense of like walking into the kitchen and the what did I come in here for?
We all have that.
We all do that. That but is a sign that we have too much on our minds.
Yes, that's multitasking.
Our mental sticky note has filled up to the brim.
The issue is if it never comes back. You know,
if it just doesn't come back and it just, you know, creates these ripples across your day of things just not getting done or not happening or unsafe situations coming up or constantly missing appointments.
All right. So disrupt memory loss. Okay. Now, number two. So
challenges in planning or solving problems.
Okay.
And again, if you've always been
sounds
a poor
like teenagers,
planner.
But okay. I have the oldest kids out of the three.
Not, and I mean, again, not to compare people with brain change to kids or teenagers, but if you think about the parts of the brain that are affected, you know, our frontal lobe, where we have our ability to plan and solve problems, that doesn't finish developing until we're in our early 20s.
Yes. Okay. Got
it. And that's one of the first parts that gets affected, especially in Alzheimer's.
All right. Okay. Thank you. All right. So ability. Okay. All right. Number three.
Difficulty completing familiar tasks.
Okay.
So things that you have done 10,000 times in your life, and all of a sudden that's harder than it used to be.
Cooking, driving, getting dressed.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, just yeah, it can be even the basics.
Okay. I love it. Thank you. Well, I love it. It's funny words. Okay, go on. So far, this is me because I've been so multitasking. I'm like, I have all these things. Because
well,
these are also the signs
about.
Of, you know, stress and doing too much
of it. Absolutely. And that's why if you just have one of these, or even if you have multiple of them, that doesn't mean you have dementia. It just means there's something going on in your brain.
Yeah.
Whether that's stress.
Too much going on in your brain. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. Okay, good. This is fun. What else?
Four, confusion with time or place.
Okay. And that's why classic... Where are we? What day is it? Those kinds of things.
And, so, and give yourself grace in January if you're still writing. In January 2024, if you're still writing 2023, not a big deal. But if you're writing 1990, let's double think about that for a moment.
Or if you're retired and days of the week are, you know, not the same as they always were, that's okay.
That's
okay.
You don't
yes, have my to husband be. And I both work from home, and we are now content, and we did it yesterday. So today's Wednesday, right? Like, because holidays. Every day yep, has a little bit of a feel that, of a similarity. Okay, got it.
Yeah.
All right.
Number five, trouble understanding visual images and spatial relationships.
Oh, that's getting funkier.
Okay. Isn't it? Yeah. So the, you know, one of the classic examples I think of, and this is for folks, you know, maybe a little further on in the disease, but, you know, like at the entrance to a building, mm-hmm. a lot of times there are these big black floor mats.
Oh, yeah.
The like industrial sized ones you're supposed to wipe your feet on. Well, that, you know, for somebody who has like a lot of visual perceptual challenges, that can actually look like a hole in the floor.
Yes.
And like a big black hole in the floor. And, you know, if a person is not wanting to step through the doorway, not wanting to walk that direction, it could be because in there, the way their brain is perceiving things, that'd be a bad idea to go step in a hole in the floor.
And is this also where we start talking about the binocular effect, where your field of vision starts
absolutely.
To change? Which, by the way, because I have progressive lenses, that happened to me a number of years ago. So I have that kind of mm-hmm. eyesight where I'm bumping into things because I can't see
that. Well, and that's why I actually don't like driving with glasses.
Yes.
Because I don't like that, you know, it like I feel like it narrows my field of vision.
Okay.
And so I prefer to I wear contacts.
Yes.
Because I don't like that that feeling of narrowing.
Whole story for me. It didn't work. Okay. So a visual, spatial, those. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Just visual information isn't computing in the same way it used to compute.
Okay. And it's funny. I don't have this list in front of me. So I'm like, okay, what number? I'm already forgetting. What number are we on? Eight now?
Six.
Oh, we're only on six.
All right, it's a lot of information.
It's a lot. I've got a cute little list right here in front of me. I can share it with you.
Okay, what's
okay.
six?
Okay, so number six, new problems with words, and that can be in speaking or in writing.
Okay.
And again, if you've always stumbled over your words, not a big deal.
Yes.
But if this is just new challenges getting your words out.
Okay.
You know, maybe.
The thing. You
exactly.
know, people,
mm-hmm.
Which I had the other day, what word could, I couldn't figure out the name of the trunk of a car.
Oh.
And I was like,
yeah.
the thing, I put it in. Mm-hmm. Okay.
But
so you see that.
Were you able to describe what it was?
Yes. Well, because I was convinced I was convinced it started with a P. I'm like, it starts with a P, where we put the stuff in. And my husband's like, the trunk of the car? And I was like, well, that doesn't start with a P. That's just me being, okay, go on.
Yeah.
I just wondered.
Number seven, misplacing things and losing the ability to retrace our steps.
Okay, yes.
So, yes, we're going to lose our phone. We're going to lose our car keys.
Yes.
We're human. We're busy. We're stressed.
But, like, really, or putting, like, the keys in the freezer or something.
Yeah,
like
it happens. It happens. But it's that, you know, as long as we can maintain that ability to say, you know, well, where did I last see that?
Yes.
Where could I possibly have put that and kind of go back in time and try and find it again?
Okay.
You know, that's a good skill. But it's when we start, you know, either not retracing our steps, just saying it's lost, blaming others for taking things.
Yeah, well, that becomes.
That's where that comes in.
That gets, all right, I'll stop doing little, because I know we have so many lists. I'm like, oh, I don't want
to. We don't have
but
to
I'm having
all
so
them.
Many. No, I want to go through all of them. It's all my little stories coming through that, because it's like years ago, I am telling a story. My mom and I did the fall checklist.
Mm-hmm.
Like, are you at risk for falls? And my mother and I just busted out laughing in a loving way, because she had every risk factor. Have you fallen in the last few months? You're like, and then, so we found some humor in it because she it's like how I'm having an interesting time going through all these. Okay. Oh, here's my favorite one, number eight.
Decreased or poor judgment.
Again, all right.
I know.
And this does go with the frontal lobe and the executive function. And again, my I have one kid that's in their 20s, another one in the late teens. And so there is these sort of executive function things that you
it's
think
just,
about
you know, being able
brain.
To, you know, have the foresight to realize, like, this might be a bad idea. This might have some poor repercussions.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that ability gets, it changes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, now I can see what nine is. That's an interesting one. Tell us what nine is.
Withdrawal from work or social activities.
Why is that? It's just too...
A caveat with this, because COVID did a lot of withdrawal mm-hmm. for us.
I know, right?
So. And so that's kind of put a weird spin on this over the last few years, because, I mean, how many activities have we not restarted after COVID?
I know.
So many. Where we found other options. But this one, you know, it could be that, you know, just, you know, the person, it just doesn't feel comfortable. It doesn't feel like mm-hmm. a safe space anymore. And a person just starts withdrawing a little bit just because mm-hmm. it feels different or it's not as enjoyable as it used to be.
Yes.
And the person might be aware that it's because this is harder and this doesn't feel right. Or mm-hmm. it might just be this kind of subconscious, like, no, I don't want to do that anymore.
All right. And then number 10, I do have a funny story with that one.
changes in mood and personality. And I like to put a little caveat on this one too.
Okay.
Because so often, you know, we have, you know, all these, you know, personality changes. Maybe somebody's depressed or anxious or angry. And, you know, if we think about all the changes that a person is experiencing, they have every right to
and
be angry.
So
they have every right to feel anxious.
And,
absolutely.
Years ago, I was listening to a talk from a gentleman who has who had Alzheimer's and was talking about his experience. And he said, my daughter told me it was me because he started to swear.
Mm-hmm.
And he had never sworn in the past. And she's like, you know, you're swearing more. And he goes, what the hell are you talking about? That's the only swear I'll do on air right now. But he was like, what the hell are you talking about? And so it made the audience sort of laugh. Like,
mm-hmm.
he did start, you know, so mm-hmm. there was a change in his personality in that.
Yeah. Change in personality, change in language, change in, you know, that ability to problem solve, to find other ways of saying things.
Yes.
You know, that's a multifaceted just phrase right there.
So listeners, and what I think I'll do is on the show, on the podcast, I'll put the links, because you were so kind to send me the links to these. You can, the Know the 10 Signs of Alzheimer's, or I guess dementia change, and that's through the, as you had said, the Alzheimer's Association. So if folks just want to Google that, go to Alzheimer's, you know, www.alz.org, and then you can start seeing all their different.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so if someone has these or starts to see a few of these, I think it links to the next top 10, which is, right, 10 steps to approach memory
yes.
concerns in others, right? Am I correct
yes.
that these two link together?
Yeah,
all right.
Yeah, absolutely. So again,
yes.
we look at those signs that Marie talked about, and again, taking into account the baseline, is this normal? Is this a change?
Mm-hmm.
Is it a pattern? Did I forget this thing and lose this thing one time, or has it happened every week for the past month?
Mm-hmm.
So looking at those things. And so number one, what changes in memory, thinking, or behavior do you have? So which of these 10 signs do
okay.
you have, or are there other things that you're noticing?
Mm-hmm.
Number two is what else might be going on. And this is one of the tricky things about dementia right now. Things are changing, hopefully. But the way dementia is diagnosed is not through a cut and dry, easy blood test. It is a clinical diagnosis where we are ruling out every other thing that could be happening. It could be vitamin deficiencies, it could be stress, it could be depression, it could be all different infections, all different
tumors.
Yes.
Well, and I was going to let you get through the whole list before I tangent, but I'm not doing it. So I did hear a great talk from some of the UNC neurology mm-hmm. folks. I had them on the radio show, and then I have this other show. It's a Zoom show, not a radio show. WCOM. Anyway, and we were talking about it the other week, and because of new pharmacological advances, there's new medication that really needs to come in earlier,
mm-hmm.
and so there's this new push to get screened earlier, but the problem is there's not enough neurologists to go around
yes,
and others
not.
And so the medical community wasn't prepared for the pharmaceutical community
mm-hmm.
to have this drug that was released, and now there really is. Before it was like, well, you know, do you need to know earlier if you're not
mm-hmm.
but now people really do need. So
yes.
I think that speaks to, what was that, number two or number three?
Number two,
which is
what else might be going on.
What else might be going
yes.
on and needing a real clinical something going
yes.
on. All right, go on. I won't interrupt
yes.
again. She says.
Learn about the signs of Alzheimer's and other dementia and the benefit of early diagnosis, which we've talked about. We know the 10 signs.
Okay.
Number four, has anyone else noticed the change? So we are our own worst critics, and we notice a lot about ourselves probably before anyone else does. And if you're a particularly anxious person, if you've got friends, relatives who have dealt with this before, it's easy to look at yourself and say, oh no, what about me? I see that a lot with caregivers, is they're caring for someone with dementia, and then all of a sudden they put their keys in the fridge and they say, oh no, it's happening to me. Well, they also haven't slept very well for the past 6 months. They've been stressed. They have been
mm-hmm.
switching around their own medications and doing all different types of things. So
yes. I'm holding back. I have things to say, but keep going. I'm gonna hold off. I'm gonna write it down.
The next, there's kind of a little breakdown, is those first few steps were about assessing the situation. The next ones are about having a conversation. So think
okay.
about who you should have the conversation to discuss concerns. So maybe talking with a friend or a family member. And it may even be, you know, your doctor. If you want to go ahead and just
mm-hmm.
have a good relationship with your doctor and just go ahead and start the conversation there, and you want to keep it to yourself, that's also
mm-hmm.
okay until you get a better idea of what's going on. The best time and place to have a conversation. Mm-hmm. So obviously we want to do that at our time of day where we're at our best. If we are not morning persons, we don't want to do these conversations first thing in the morning. We want to try and get ourselves and set ourselves up for success. What will you or the person having the conversation say? So this is also kind of from the perspective of I've noticed something about someone else and maybe I need to talk to them about it. Mm-hmm. So it can go both ways. Offer to go to the doctor with the person. So if you're noticing these changes about a person, you're having this conversation, offering to go to the doctor with them. And I always say that's helpful for pretty much anyone, because anyone who's gone to a doctor, I want to say the research says we lose about 80% of what a doctor says in every appointment.
Oh,
so
I'm sure I do.
Having a second set of ears and eyes and a notepad mm-hmm. can be really helpful. Number 9 is, if needed, have multiple conversations. You know, this mm-hmm. can be really overwhelming. And if we need to break this down into several conversations over several days, several weeks, that's okay. And number 10 is reaching out for support, which is where we and the Alzheimer's Association, Dementia Alliance, all the other great organizations of the area come in.
So, okay, this is what I was going to say before, but I let you finish the 10, which is, that was the 10 steps to approach memory concerns. Again, that's from the www.alz.org, the Alzheimer's Association. What's fascinating is there's also, I think, a part of brain change where people do not have insight into their
yes,
own changes.
Absolutely.
So I'm thinking about in my own world when I notice things in other people that I know and they're like, oh, no, I don't, or whatever. You're just, you know, babying them or whatever. And this whole issue of it takes also, so I think it's great when people recognize changes in themselves, but then there's a complexity when they're not recognizing the changes. And I think I hear that more often, but the other people around them do. And so it's an interesting, that's where you get called in, the complexities. So it might be, I'm looking at the time, and what I know we have one more top 10, but I do want to talk about when you start having these concerns, you go in, and one of the very first things they do is a cognitive or memory screen. Tell us about, looking at Marie, we'll give Marie a chance, and then both of you will can talk a little bit about the different types of cognitive screens. I've heard different terms. Well, I know there's a few different ones. You two are the MoCA people. I don't know whether that's similar or different than SLUMS, the St. Louis.
Similar.
Okay, so what is MoCA? We'll focus mostly on that.
Yeah, so the MoCA is the Montreal Cognitive Assessment. So it's capital M, lowercase o for Montreal, the Cognitive Assessment.
Okay.
And it's, you know, out of 30 points, and I like this. I mean, it just happens to be the one that I got trained up on, mm-hmm. oh goodness, years ago now.
It's the one I hear the most.
It's pretty readily accessible.
SLUMS, which is also on 30, I think.
Yeah, right? It's pretty readily accessible, and I like it just because it covers, it's not just memory, and it covers several different areas of cognition, so I feel like it gives, you know, a decent picture of what, you know, what's going on. So, you know, it covers some, like, visual spatial activities, some problem solving, it covers some, like calculations and word usage. It covers some
orientation,
you know. Some, like, how do you, like, conceptualize different ideas, how mm-hmm. do you, you know, pay attention and focus on different tasks over a period of time, mm-hmm. Along with that short-term memory recall as well.
Okay.
So yeah, it covers, because, you know, brain change, it's not just memory mm-hmm. is actually a very tiny portion of brain change. And so I like it because it covers so many of those different areas.
And so is it that it's, I think this is a leading question, is it that it's 30 questions or is it like 10 questions that have different score numbers? And tell us some
in between.
Of the questions.
Okay. In between. I should have brought a printout of it with me. So like the, I feel like, you know, even like there might be question, like multiple.
Is there the clock? Does this one have the clock?
It does have the clock draw.
All right. So I know some of the questions that I don't know which one is MoCA, which one's SLUMS, but, and is it like 10 to 2? You have to draw 10 to 2 or something like that?
Yeah. A clock that says 10 to 2. And so the clock itself, at least in the MoCA, has three different points associated with it.
Yes.
Point number one is you have to actually make a circle.
Oh, I've seen people. Okay. Because sometimes.
Yeah, it's not always a circle. Point number two is your numbers. All 12 of your numbers have to be on there, and they have to be more or less in the correct position.
Yes.
Doesn't matter if they're inside of the clock or outside the clock. Doesn't matter if they're Roman numerals versus standard mm-hmm. numerals. But, you know, all the numbers have to be there, and they have to be in more or less the right spot.
Yes.
And then part number three is actually setting the correct time.
Which I am so, and I bring this one up because it is the question I think is going to be the question that gets changed
mm-hmm.
because so many people do not use analog clocks now. I'm looking at a clock now. It's digital, or I don't. Is it called analog? Like, not a lot of people. And I think our younger generations these days, they look at their phone. There's not a lot, so it's not a standard skill like it used to. So
I've
said
curious
that
over time.
Years ago at the place where I used to work that did this, and I said, this is no longer going to be a good indicator because it's now a nostalgic indicator for me. Like, I don't know how to do that. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I hope they don't stop teaching us how to read clocks.
Well, okay. Which
but
is
you
like,
don't do it
I mean,
as
that's
often.
A whole other show. Yeah. Kids don't know cursive these days. I mean,
that's
like,
true.
There's a
that's
lot.
That's true.
But then aren't there also the five words, like you say, five words.
Mm-hmm. Let's see. Church, daisy, red.
Is it like penny?
Face velvet.
Face velvet. There we go.
Between the two of us, we're probably a 30.
That's the version. And that's, mind you, what we're talking about right now is version 8.1. Mm-hmm. They have 0.2, they have 0.3, so they can switch up what it is.
Okay, because I remember I would talk to folks the day after they would do the screen, and they'd say, tell the person it was pen. Or penny. Like, it was cake. Like, they would remember it and they scored
back.
Fine,
it
but they, like,
back.
Remember it. It was such an emotional experience that went into there. Okay, so there's question about words. Mm-hmm. There's, is it like name as many animals as you can in 60 seconds?
Name as many words that start with the letter F. That's the one that people.
F.
Oh. And it's
it
1 minute.
X-ray.
I've had people do that, and
as
I count
it's a word,
it.
Doesn't matter. No proper names, no like verb conjugations.
Oh gosh, and that's a harder letter, friend.
Yes, and
fabulous,
as soon as the
there
timer stops and we go on to something else, they're like, oh, frog, friends.
How many
fog.
Numbers do you need to get? How many words do you need to get in a minute to be
12?
A 12? Oh gosh. Okay, go on.
It's doable. It All is right. totally doable. You would have it. I have no doubt.
Yes. Well. And the reason why I'm asking with the questions, I had heard something years ago, and tell me if it's correct. Some people were saying, well, they want to practice for the MoCA or study for it. And others wondered if that, you know, was a good idea or not. And I remember the comment was, if someone is really experiencing dementia and brain change, they won't really be able to practice for it. So it's okay if they said they practiced. That was, I don't know if I'm retelling that story right, but that it wasn't a concern if someone said, well, they prepped for it. Because if their brain had the ability to prep and remember everything they prepped for, then is that really a sign?
I feel like it might skew the results.
Your faces are squished.
Yeah, it depends. I mean, you can memorize those five words, and if it's drilled into you for long,
like I will never be able to take version 8.1. I've given it so many times at this point, it'll never be an accurate measure for me. So
it's just muscle memory. If
it's just muscle memory at this point.
All right. Mm-hmm. Okay. Good to know. So then, So you give this test, and then it gives you a number out of 30. And what are those numbers?
So I'll see if Kendall's pulling out her, or she can find it real quick.
Because I remember.
So it kind of correlates to, you know, is this an average kind of score that we might expect from anybody? And I'm pretty sure that's anything 26 or above.
Yes. Okay. And I do realize while you're looking at it that a little aside, we did have a politician at one point take it and kind of confused it with an IQ test.
Mm.
Getting a 30 doesn't mean that your IQ is, you know, super. It just means you don't have an indication of a cognitive.
At this exact moment in time.
At this exact moment. So they sort of were so excited they got a 30. And I was like, that's
normal.
So 26 and above is
considered normal.
Mm-hmm. Considered on the normal.
Because we're all human. We're all going to mess up a little bit of something somewhere along the way. So, you know, those 4 points are kind of that wiggle room that's considered normal.
Okay.
And then 18 to 25 is what they classify as mild cognitive impairment, which is another thing we'll get thrown around a lot that a lot of people don't fully understand. Some people call it kind of the precursor to dementia, and I don't really love that because it isn't necessarily. It means there's something going on in your brain that's causing certain things to be difficult or certain things to change. It is not dementia. It could become dementia or it could not. There's no way to tell other than to wait and see.
Okay. And then under 18, you're at the more moderate or severe.
More moderate, and then under 10 is in the more severe
category.
Okay. When do is there a point, I realize with the interest of time I should ask, is there a point at which you say if you're at this number you need to be getting assistance, or is it really different for everyone?
I'd say it's different for everybody.
Okay.
It's different for, and keeping in mind what somebody's baseline is too. You know, this is, you know, supposed to be standard across all people, but that doesn't mean it necessarily is. And I mean, I just, you know, there's a lot of gray area.
Yeah.
I'm not a very cut and dry kind of a person, but mm-hmm. I feel like there's a lot of gray area in there.
Well, so we are at the 2 minute mark. I know. Can you believe? Because I keep tangenting us. Maybe it is good, and I will not interrupt at all, but I do think this might be a fun top 10 to end with, which is the 10 ways to love your brain. Might that be a fun... I won't interrupt, but whoever wants... Or why don't you tag team?
We'll tag team it.
Yes. Okay. All right.
Hit the books. So this is formal education will help reduce the risk of cognitive decline and dementia, and taking a class at a local community college, community center, or online, anything to learn something new challenges your brain.
But out. Smoking increases your risk of cognitive decline. If you can, quit to reduce your risk.
Follow your heart. Risk factors for cardiovascular disease and stroke, such as obesity, high blood pressure, and diabetes, negatively impact your cognitive health. So we say heart health is brain health.
Heads up. Brain injury can cause risk of cognitive decline and dementia. So wear your seatbelt, wear a helmet, take care of your head.
Fuel up right. Eat a balanced diet that is higher in vegetables and fruit to help reduce the risk of cognitive decline.
Catch some Z's. Not getting enough sleep can cause problems with other kinds of problems with memory and thinking.
Take care of your mental health. Some studies link depression with cognitive decline, so seek treatment if you have depression, anxiety, or stress.
Buddy up. Staying socially engaged can support your brain health.
Yes. Stump yourself. Challenge your mind, build a piece of furniture, play games of strategy like bridge.
Or anything else that appeals to you.
Yes.
That's challenging. Break a sweat. Engage in regular cardiovascular exercise that elevates your heart rate.
Oh my goodness, that was the top 10. That was awesome. And it took us right to the end of the show, but I do want to give you each like 20 seconds. I've been asking this question lately, and I want to ask each of you to end the show. What gives you hope when you think about dementia or brain change or anything in the world of brain health?
Oh my gosh. I think all the wonderful research that is around us, particularly locally in this area, just seeing some of the clinical trials and the new things that are coming out. Mm-hmm.
Well, and I'd say, I mean, kind of piggybacking off of that, the Alzheimer's mm-hmm. Association has said that the first person to survive Alzheimer's is already living among us.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, goodness.
So they think they're, I mean, close. I mean, it might probably not be tomorrow, but, you know, and the person who's living might be an infant, but they believe that first person
they're
is living
here.
Among us.
Well, I've said this before. What gives me hope is the two of you. Seriously, I don't mean to be overly, you know, kissing up, but seriously, having you in our community, having you and the other staff members at the Orange County Department on Aging and so many amazing resources really gives me hope that whenever I'm experiencing a challenge or people in the community that I know exactly who to go to. So with that, I do want to give, I'm looking for my magnet, my aging helpline magnet. Oh, here we go. Folks, I gave you the general number for the Orange County Department on Aging, but if you do have a specific question for one of our aging transitions staff members, their direct line for the aging helpline is 919-968-2087. And that's for the amazingly wonderful people at the Orange County Department on Aging's Aging Transitions. Thank you, Orange County Department on Aging. Thank you, Kendall and Marie, for being back here for the third and I think fourth time. Thank you to WCOM LP Chapel Hill Carrboro for hosting our Aging Well Together show. And lastly, listeners, thank you for joining us, and good health to all of you. All right, be well.